Alienated Nation, The New Quest for Liberty, Wars Are Us. The writers of the Treaty of Versailles crafted that document to accomplish one thing and one thing only. They wanted to make sure that the suppliers of weapons and the technology of war would stay in business by guaranteeing that the Third Reich would happen. In 1919, the world's largest banks and global industries wiped out the middle class with an engineered crash of the stock market and invested in technology that had a single purpose: to kill people and break things. America was about to go to war for the rest of time. It has been called the Great American Generation. Young Americans were fed into the machines of war that were financed and facilitated by American banks and American industries. On July 30th, 1938, in his Dearborn, Michigan office, Henry Ford proudly accepted a Nazi medal on his 75th birthday. The Grand Cross of the Order of the German Eagle is the highest award the Reich can bestow on foreigners. The medal arrived with a note of personal greetings from Adolf Hitler. He was being thanked for training and mentoring the Third Reich on how to manufacture using Ford assembly line technology. Ford also designed and built the first tanks for the American Army, making huge profits from both sides of the war in Europe. Some of the primary and more famous Americans and companies that were involved in the fascist regimes of Europe are William Randolph Hearst, Joseph Kennedy, that's JFK's father, Charles Lindbergh, John Rockefeller, Andrew Mellon, that's the head of Alcoa, a banker and Secretary of Treasury, by the way, DuPont, General Motors, Standard Oil, Ford, ITT, Alan Dulles, later the head of the CIA, Prescott Bush, National City Bank, and General Electric. All of these individuals and companies were supporters, financiers, or suppliers of the Nazi war machine. The German members of the Allied Committee of Experts were equally interesting. In 1924, Hjalmar Schacht was president of the Reichsbank and had taken a prominent role in organization work for the Dawes Plan. So did German banker Karl Melchior. One of the 1928 German delegates was A. Vogler of the German steel cartel Stahlwerk Vereinigt. The United States and Germany were represented by the Morgan bankers on one side and Schacht and Vogler on the other side. The rise of Hitler's Germany and subsequent German rearmament was financed by the work of this small group of financial leaders. The German industrial cartels that financed the Hitler war machine were the very same members and advisors of the major banks in New York. As described by Carol Quigley, this system was nothing less than to create a world system of financial control in private hands, able to dominate the political system of each country and the economy of the world as a whole. This feudal system worked in the 1920s as it works today, through the medium of the private central bankers in each country who control the national money supply of individual economies. He further states in his book, Weapon Systems and Political Stability, on page 12, "Just as our ideas on the nature of security are falsified by our limited experience as Americans, so our ideas are falsified by the fact that we have experienced security in the form of public authority and the modern state. We do not easily see that the state, especially in its modern sovereign form, is a rather recent innovation in the experience of Western civilization, not over a few centuries old. But men have experienced security and insecurity throughout all human history. In all that long period, Security has been associated with power relationships and is today associated with the state only because this is the dominant form which power relationships happen to take in recent times. Close quote. Now, there is a balance to be considered here. The folks down at Wars R Us have studied and prepared for every aspect of war except one, the absence of war. It is a matter of logic to assume that war requires enemies. This logic would be wrong, of course. War requires weapons and the will to use them against other human beings. If there is no enemy against which to wage war, it is of no consequence. We need not weep Alexandrian tears for a lack of empires to conquer, because war and the preparation for war is the driving force behind virtually every major new technology since the bullet. Why? Why is it that war is the conduit through which flows the money for innovation in energy, space exploration, and even immunology? The driving force is fear. It is this one concept that we need to establish in detail here in this book. There are three aspects of fear that justify and motivate the flow of more than $1.3 trillion a year in weapons development and production in America alone. Add to that the national budgets of every country on earth, and the number is nothing short of staggering to behold. Here are three aspects of fear. The fear by the people of being conquered by another people. This is typically seen as a national defense mentality. Propaganda is used by the folks down at Wars R Us to keep the money flowing to their complex. They explain how bad the global neighborhood is. They tell us that large nations are aiming their missiles at us, so we should have missiles aimed at them. They tell us that small countries who cannot hope to support a uniformed soldier will sneak a weapon into our country and commit an act of terror against us. They tell us that our own college-educated freedom fighters are a major threat against the sovereignty of the nation. The fear of losing national interests. I used to think that there were two national interests, the defense of the Constitution and the exclusive control of cheap oil. In the last 11 years, oil has become the sole national interest. We have gone to war to protect the free flow of oil. We will continue to go to war to secure cheap supplies of oil without depleting our own supplies. The fear of losing the military-industrial complex. Now, this has nothing to do with the other two fears. The ability to make the best war in the world is what establishes power. Power is the purpose of modern warfare. Power for modern warfare is established with two types of weapons. The first type of weapon is a deadly weapon. This is usually in the form of a missile or a bullet of some kind. The second type of weapon is a shock weapon. History has shown us that leaders have made wise and unwise decisions of when to use which weapon. The relationship between them has been misunderstood by historians and by military leaders as a matter of fact. These weapons are complementary, but must be used at the right time and in the right place. Missiles are weapons of destruction and death, and shock weapons are generally weapons of duress. The former can kill, the latter can make men obey. When I was a young boy, I remember seeing the police cruisers emblazoned with the slogan, "To protect and to serve." Well, that slogan is no longer there. Andy of Mayberry was an ambassador of the city and inspired the law-abiding citizen. Police size and budgets were set according to population. The usual calculation was 2% of any society would behave outside the law. Even more important was the statistical reality that 80% of crime occurred at the hands of the same perpetrators repeatedly. Still, the function and behavior of police rapidly became more militarized. Shock weapons, which can be used to varying degrees for enforcement, were employed by police as well as deadly weapons. Batons, pepper spray, rubber bullets, water cannons, and high-voltage tasers are the shock weapons utilized by police, coupled with a no-questions-allowed tactic that prevented the people from protesting the approach or engagement by a police officer. The shock is being in the proximity of a police officer. The shock of seeing a municipal soldier is what makes men obey. Now, let's cover something for clarity. The common defense outlined in the Constitution is to be provided by the federal government to the people of this country against all enemies, foreign or domestic. That much we agree on. The only body of domestic enemies that are protected specifically in that document is the body of political protest. We have the right to assemble, but that has been truncated by regulations that prevent unlawful assembly. Unlawful assembly is that which has not been approved or permitted by the state in advance. Merely announcing on a social network that you are going to assemble can get you arrested. I watched an armored platoon of municipal soldiers march curb to curb in a military short-stepped stomp while banging their batons in unison against their shields in a shock attempt to force a civil gathering to disperse. The city councilwoman, who stood in front of her business suit trying to stop the police from attacking these young students, was shot in the face with a rubber bullet. She dropped in the street with blood coming from her forehead and was rushed to the hospital. The tactic worked. Everyone fled out of fear of pain. No one was killed. Now let's be clear about something. The United States has been through two world wars, the Vietnam War, the Korean War, the Spanish-American War, and dozens of skirmishes around the world involving literally millions of soldiers and thousands upon thousands of pieces of military hardware. Not once has a single bomb been dropped on a single square foot of American soil. Not one single foreign uniformed soldier has ever walked a single step on American soil since the Revolutionary War. We have thus fought all wars with impunity, able to manufacture weapons unfettered by raids or shortages of any kind. For that reason, we have never been defeated. Yet Wars R Us maintains a $1 trillion annual budget and a global presence in more than 500 military installations outside the U.S. The most fearsome sound in the world is the sound of the B-52. Our enemies know that this is the last sound any battlefield hears. The shock value of that aircraft alone has kept our enemies at bay for more than 50 years. It was a Cold War asset that has delivered victory without challenge. The big enemies are all gone now. Weapons systems have been enhanced by surveillance systems. There are two types of surveillance systems, the type that we employ in space to watch over the Earth, and the terrestrial-based type employed to watch the local streets. They are both extremely well deployed now. In case you are wondering if I am right, just look up and to the right the next time you drive the freeway or on a city street. You'll see a single pole with a mounted camera on it. The steel panel will be large, much larger than you would expect to control a simple camera. There are thousands of these in every city and along the freeway. There are two questions that come to mind. First, who is sitting in front of these cameras watching? And second, what are they doing with that information? I have seen hundreds of these cameras in a single day all over town. The only way we know how effective this civilian surveillance system has become is by watching the British police use them. When there is a violent act in London, like a bomb going off, review experts go to the digital storage bank and find everyone who has gone in and out of that facility in the last 24 hours. They track every single one of those people back to the point of origin and send an officer over there. Within a few hours, they have the apartment where the bomb was made and have arrested all the people who have gone out or into that apartment. The same system is being constructed in America. Have you seen anyone putting these systems into place along your highways? Do you know what company builds the equipment? Do you know how much the system costs or how much of your property taxes must go to pay for it? Do you know that the system is capable of checking and tracking license plate numbers, cross-checking it with the type of vehicle, and then cross-checking both of these to your facial features? Do you think that it is there to prevent identity theft? Do you think the government is trying to keep you safe? The DV Master, also known as the DMCO-202LPH, is an intelligent vehicle license plate reading box camera featuring a built-in CARDC iris-controlled technology which allows the camera to achieve reliable car license plate recognition for road surveillance of a car at speeds up to 90 miles an hour. Burns and McDonald completed design of a comprehensive surveillance camera system for the Illinois Department of Transportation. The system involved the installation of several pole-mounted CCTV cameras at strategic locations on the Dan Ryan-Stevenson Interchange and the Dan Ryan-Eisenhower Interchange to monitor the on- and off-ramps for traffic blockage. Camera video signals transmit to a traffic system center at Oak Park, then via microwave link to the IDOT, District 1 headquarters in Schaumburg, and finally to the Chicago Traffic Information Center. The entire system is monitored at all three locations. Burns and McDonald completed the project design in less than 2 months with extensive coordination between agencies and suppliers. The Department of Transportation has launched the Intelligent Transportation System Exploration Research Program, intended to provide an avenue to solicit creative ideas for new technology options that are deserving of further attention and that further the ITS, Strategic Research Plan, goals for the next 5 years. The technology is rising to the challenge and to meet the grant money that has been allocated for this program. There have been numerous billion-dollar initiatives enacted, funded, and completed over the past 10 years. Current federal ITS research programs are capitalizing on successful research initiatives initiated in 2004. Claris. The Claris initiative explored ways to integrate a wide variety of weather observing, forecasting, and data management systems combined with robust and continuous data quality checking into systems that could deliver timely, accurate, and reliable weather and road condition information. The Congestion Initiative. The Congestion Initiative program encouraged metropolitan areas to implement the use of four complementary and synergistic strategies that contribute to the relief of urban congestion: tolling, transit, telecommunication, and technology. The Cooperative Intersection Collision Avoidance System. It was a four-year program partnership between the US DOT, automobile manufacturers, and state and local departments of transportation to develop a vehicle infrastructure cooperative system that address the intersection crash problems related to stop sign violations, traffic signal violations, stop sign movement, and unprotected signalized left turn movements. The Electronic Freight Management. Electronic Freight Management Initiative applied web technologies that improved data and message transmissions between supply chain partners. It promoted and evaluated innovative e-business concepts, enabling process coordination and information sharing for supply chain freight partners through public-private collaboration. Emergency Transportation Operations. The Emergency Transportation Operation Initiative was a collective effort among Federal Highway Administration, National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, and Federal Transit Administration. This collaborative effort encompassed six functional areas: public access to emergency services, enhanced information sharing, evacuation management and operations, and transportation operations through biohazard situations, preparedness and response, and planned special events like baseball games or auto races. Integrated Corridor Management. Through the Integrated Corridor Management System Initiative, the US DOT provided guidance to assist agencies to manage the transportation as a system, rather than the more traditional approach of managing individual assets. agencies learned how to manage their corridor as an integrated asset in order to improve travel time, reliability, and predictability, help manage congestion, and empower travelers through better information and more choices. The Integrated Vehicle-Based Safety System. Through the Integrated Vehicle-Based Safety System Initiative, the U.S. DOT established a partnership with the automotive and commercial vehicle industries to develop and field test an integrated safety system on light vehicles and commercial trucks. Mobility services for all Americans. Many Americans have difficulty accessing some of their basic needs because they must rely on transportation services provided for seniors, persons with disabilities, and the economically disadvantaged, which are often fragmented, unreliable, and inefficiently operated. Lack of coordination is the leading obstacle to meeting the mobility needs of the people who need the services most. The goal of the Mobility Services for All Americans initiative was to improve transportation services and simplify access to employment, healthcare, education, and other community activities by means of ITS technology. The Rural Safety Initiative. The goal of the Rural Safety Innovation Program was to improve rural road safety by assisting rural communities in addressing highway safety problems, heightening awareness and interest in the rural safety issues, and promoting the benefits of rural safety countermeasures that could reduce rural crashes and fatalities. The Intelligent Distributed Surveillance System has been designed to provide the ability to recognize objects and humans, to describe their actions and interactions from information acquired by sensors. It's essential for automated visual surveillance. The increasing need for intelligent visual surveillance in commercial law enforcement and military applications makes automated visual surveillance systems one of the main current application domains in computer vision. The emphasis of this review is on discussion of the creation of intelligent distributed automated surveillance systems. The survey concludes with a discussion of possible future directions. There is a flow for this horrendous flow of information to create a semi-automated method for analysis. This means that thousands of video feeds don't require thousands of humans watching those screens. The software, hardware, and firmware are being upgraded in a flurrying process of capability designed to accomplish this goal. The traditional flow of data goes from detection to object recognition, to tracking, to behavior and activities analysis, and then to a database. If you want to know how sophisticated and how fast this process can work, go purchase an Xbox Kinect and play a game without a controller. The high-speed software and the imaging system can utilize your body, compare it to the static background, and then match your behavior to actions required in the game. This game is a direct result of technology transfer activities between research companies and private corporations. The same thing is occurring with government funding. The American bureaucracies are utilizing the IDSS just as it would any weapons system. They are using it for threat assessment. Benjamin Franklin once said, "If the people trade liberty for security, they soon will have neither." Well, it has already reached the point where the folks down at Wars R Us have just about everything they need to accomplish the next level of security. In the United States federal judicial system, a single court operates in almost total secrecy. Its deliberations and even its decisions are closed to the public. Created in 1978, the 11 judges of the U.S. Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court consider and rule on applications by federal law enforcement and intelligence agencies to conduct electronic surveillance anywhere in the United States. The FIS court operates under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which regulates the gathering of foreign intelligence information inside the United States and rarely refuses a government request to conduct special surveillance. Section 1802B of the FISA authorizes the federal government to file applications for electronic surveillance with the FIS court and empowers the FIS court to grant orders approving electronic surveillance of foreign power or agent of a foreign power for the purpose of obtaining foreign intelligence information. In July 2008, Congress passed revisions to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, FISA, allowing presidential administrations to expand its foreign intelligence operations in a manner that could violate U.S. civil liberties. The amendment was created by the president to remove the backlog of surveillance requests. In other words, a semi-automatic program designed to provide lightning-fast threat assessment and asset deployment alerts would be facilitated. While the FISA Amendments Act specifies that no intentional surveillance of conversations between and among United States persons resident in the United States or U.S. citizens resident in other countries, or surveillance targeting United States persons, is very easy to imagine that the federal government would use information about U.S. persons accidentally obtained under FISA to target political enemies, dissidents, suspected undocumented immigrants, and suspected drug users or dealers. One of the keys to success for any security plan that is designed to prevent outside change is to match any threat to the organization being protected. The main reason America has only come close to losing one foreign war is plain to see. Which foreign war? The Revolutionary War. Why? That is the right question. In the Revolutionary War, America had the presence of foreign soldiers and fought battles against them on American soil. In all other wars, not a single soldier nor a single weapon was deployed on American soil. Factories produced weapons and supplies unfettered throughout all conflicts. There were no tanks rolling down neighborhood streets. There were no blackouts to prevent targeting by foreign bombers. Little more than Andy of Mayberry was required to keep peace in America. America will never deploy the U.S. military to fight a domestic enemy. Americans would never allow it. We would not vote such a thing into action. There are also more guns in America than there are people, and this is precisely and specifically protected under Article 2 of the Constitution. Of course, there is no mention of ammunition. I'll cover that later. The keys to success for the plan is early assessment and the element of surprise. Remember, I said that no weapon system has ever been developed that has not been deployed. Well, the intelligence surveillance program was a natural option that came out of the computer industry. Smart people need grants, especially when it comes to academics, grants from government agencies. Government agencies have their own system of legislation and the ability to make full use of the judicial system. This is a comprehensive system that operates completely outside the purview of Congress. That's right. Congress has oversight, but it is not involved in the writing, vetting, or approval of regulations written by agencies. All of these regulations have the force of law. This is a clear violation of the Constitution, but no one is even beginning to talk about curtailing it. Hundreds of thousands of attorneys and enforcement officers are funded and commanded by these agencies without any comparison to the Constitution. These grants are at the headwaters of all weapons systems. The American surveillance system is funded, developed, deployed, continuously improved, and operated by unelected agencies that are headed by only one person, the president. With such absolute power, it is only a matter of time before the wrong person gets into that office. This was foreseen by the founding fathers. It was absolutely their intention and design to prevent this America from becoming a reality. They knew and tried their absolute best to draft and ratify a form of government that would prevent one man from being in command of the liberty of every person in America. That power has been seized. It has been funded. In less than 10 years, it has created an infrastructure so massive and so powerful that it may never be stopped. I suppose the real question is, have we the people happily abdicated our liberty in totality in exchange for security? The USA Patriot Act was passed by the United States Congress in 2001 as a response to the September 11, 2001 attacks. It has 10 titles, each containing numerous sections. Title 2, Enhanced Surveillance Procedures, granted increased powers of surveillance to various government agencies and bodies. This title has 25 sections, with one of the sections, Section 224, containing a sunset clause, which sets an expiration date. The history of government agencies has proven one irrefutable observation. Once a power is assumed by a government, it is never released. The Patriot Act is apparently necessary in fighting the war on terrorism. The Patriot Act expanded the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act of 1978 and its provisions in 18 U.S. Code, dealing with crimes and criminal procedure. It also amended the Electronic Communications Privacy Act of 1986. In general, the title expanded federal agencies' powers in intercepting, sharing, and using private telecommunications, especially electronic communications, along with a focus on criminal investigations by updating the rules that govern computer crime investigations. And those agencies write their own regulations, which have the force of law. The folks down at Wars R Us needed a new agency to coordinate the surveillance of America to determine if a crime is being committed. The activities of people inside America can be determined to be a crime real-time, retroactively, and without due process. In other words, any person can be tracked down to the point at which the activity was determined to be criminal through electronic means. Ignorance of the law, or regulation, is no excuse. The right to face one's accuser is not possible. One cannot cross-examine a computer. That new agency was the Department of Homeland Security. The head of the agency is not elected. The head of the agency only has one commander, the president. Where is Franklin now? Quote, "The Department of Homeland Security will lead the unified national effort to secure America. We will prevent and deter terrorist attacks and protect against and respond to threats and hazards to the nation. We will ensure safe and secure borders, welcome lawful immigrants and visitors, and promote the free flow of commerce." Close quote. Is this a powerful statement with numerous unconstitutional ramifications, or is this the ultimate implementation of the protection of America from enemies, both foreign and domestic? Is the DHS a master organization unilaterally commanding other agencies, each with their own budgets, regulations, enforcement officers, and judicial processes? The answer is unequivocally yes. The budget for the DHS for 2013 is a whopping $59 billion, with more than 82% of it being discretionary. To continue to address these evolving threats, the DHS employs risk-based, intelligence-driven operations to prevent terrorist attacks through a multi-layered detection system focusing on enhanced targeting and information sharing. DHS works to interdict threats and dangerous people at the earliest point possible. DHS also works closely with its federal, state, and local law enforcement partners on a wide range of critical homeland security issues in order to provide those on the front lines with the tools they need to address the threats in their communities. When the attacks of September 11, 2001 occurred, the plan was a complete success. America was changed forever. Liberty was replaced with efforts to increase security by popular demand. Well, perhaps I should say that it was adopted without much more than a libertarian effort to keep the bobber from being taken beneath the surface by the American people. The military is now woven into local law enforcement like razor wire. The Federal Emergency Management Agency improved its mission to support our citizens and first responders to ensure that, as a nation, we work together to build, sustain, and improve our capability to prepare for, protect against, respond to, recover from, and mitigate all hazards. The Transportation Safety Administration was formed with the mission statement, "We are your neighbors, friends, and relatives. We are 50,000 security officers, inspectors, directors, air marshals, and managers who protect the nation's transportation systems so you and your family can travel safely. We look for bombs at checkpoints and airports, and we inspect rail cars. We patrol subways with our law enforcement partners, and we work to make all modes of transportation safe." The Transportation Security Administration protects the nation's transportation systems to ensure freedom of movement for people and commerce. It sounds innocuous. The claim is to ensure freedom of movement by restricting the free movement of people and commerce. The act of searching people, luggage, packages, containers, and documents prior to letting them on aircraft is the closest thing to a police state that a nation can get without using force. Millions of travelers voluntarily waive their Fourth Amendment rights by being searched without probable cause. This is what the Fourth Amendment reads. "The Fourth Amendment to the United States Constitution is part of the Bill of Rights, which guards against unreasonable searches and seizures, along with requiring any warrant to be judicially sanctioned and supported by probable cause. It was adopted as a response to the abuse of the writ of assistance, which is a type of general search warrant in the American Revolution. Search and arrest should be limited in scope according to specific information supplied to the issuing court, usually by a law enforcement officer who has sworn by it." The term unreasonable is the adjective that has been redefined by the executive branch to the judicial branch and emasculated by the legislative branch. The founding fathers knew exactly what they were doing when they drafted this amendment. They had been through it before with many monarchs over many centuries that used the violation of this individual sovereignty to eliminate their political enemies. The entire administration operates on regulations that have the force of law without any effective Supreme Court challenge and without any representation in the Republic. Refusing to successfully profile travelers, this one agency has affected the tone of security more than any other agency. Whoever executed the attacks of 9/11 accomplished their goal 100% with the establishment of the TSA. It is highly doubtful that Americans will ever recover their airports, bus depots, train stations, and public highways from this parliamentary organization. We have truly become one nation under surveillance. It is run directly by the president without any due process through an appointed Secretary of Homeland Security. Currently, that person is Janet Napolitano. The rule of law has become the law of rule. The citizenry being targeted by the volumes of regulations being written every day will change as the threat evolves. The founding fathers knew that the citizen would become a threat to the president's rule. It is precisely why Constitution gave the people the power over government and not the other way around. American citizens who wish to take to the streets to protest and speak out against government activities or policies are the threat. That threat may be an individual inciting others to taking action. That threat may be the citizen who marches with signs or a text on a phone to an online social network. Each day, the police move the protesters further and further from the doors of government buildings that house the agencies to which they speak. That act of protesting against government and government agencies is the specific type of speech that is targeted for protection by the Constitution. This speech has evolved into the threat that government is trying to stop. This threat may be a comment made on a radio program or a television program. The target has become the American who believes he is no longer free. The entire $59 billion DHS program is designed to predict when that belief will turn into action, and to instantly process that action into incarceration or termination. I suppose it's all fine, as long as we elect good men to the office of president. I suppose if you are doing nothing wrong, you have nothing to fear. At least we can still elect the nation's leadership. I hope.